The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we will be taking your calls throughout the entire program, interspersed with some short commentaries on issues I believe that you find important, the latest on health and healing. Always, this is the epicenter for getting people healthier and happier. And our number to call in throughout the hour is 888-874-4888. You can also watch this program if you choose to. We're streaming live from my studio in New York City by going to progressiveradionetwork.com or garynoll.com. I'll also be taking some calls if you were at the Philadelphia rally yesterday at the Tea Party convention there, or lecture meeting. I'd like to get your input, your feedback. I was there. I interviewed about 300 people, and you can call that same number. I have my own thoughts, but I'll hold my thoughts until others have given their thoughts. Let's begin with the latest on health and healing. First off, a new research from Brigham Young University in Utah found that having a good social relationship or relationships with friends, marriage, or children may be every bit as important to a healthy lifespan as quitting smoking, losing weight, or taking certain medications. People with strong social relationships were 50% less likely to die early than people without such support. Quote, a lack of social relationships was equivalent to smoking up to 15 cigarettes a day. Now, my thoughts on this. Let's go back in time to 1975. I was doing a series of experiments, and I found that by putting a lot of rats into a large open room, the whole third floor of the Institute of Applied Biology, that they live longer by almost 15% than the same identical family of rats downstairs in the normal closed environment where they were living alone in a small cage. The food was the same, the light was the same, but the interactions were different. So interactions showed this to be the case. Also, I went around the world. I was interested in why people in other countries were living longer, but more importantly, were healthier and frequently more happy than right here in the United States, when we seem to have what was considered the epitome of high standard of living. But we didn't have the longest lifespan by any means. And when I came back, and it took nearly 5 years to do this, because I had to travel many different countries, I would watch how people interacted. And one of the most interesting interactions was what I found in an Italian little village. Now, I had a physician and a couple buddies, including my brothers, who traveled with me. And they were in a Jeep, and I was jogging. And I jogged 20 miles a day through the Italian countryside. And two of my buddies were from Italy, and they spoke fluent Italian. And when you come upon one of these communities, first you notice that they're small, anywhere from 6 to maybe 10, 11 homes. It might be 3, 4, 5, 6 miles before you come to the next hamlet. Many of the homes were hundreds of years old. The oldest that I found was 800 years old. And we started our day at daybreak. And the very first hour, I was in this little town, and it was just right out of an old movie. Everything was very old. You could smell the oldness. and I smelt this fresh baked bread. And so we stopped in front of this one house, and there was a little shelf like a Dutch door, but on that Dutch door there were a bunch of loaves of bread, and they had just been baked. And the woman and my buddies who spoke Italian were talking, and they said to her that this is a scientist and an author from America, and he's also a farmer, and he wanted to know what life was like, and could we spend a little time with their family. And without exception, all the Italians that we met were extremely gracious. They're just one of the finest people in the world. I just love the Italians. And we went into the house, and I said, let me work with you throughout the day. And so I did. So whatever they were doing, I did. And being a chef and a gourmet master chef, I have about 1,700 original recipes. It was always fun to see how I would cook a dish with the ingredients they had, and they'd test it and taste it. But also in the garden, I would be naming herbs, and we would exchange ideas. And they appreciated that I wasn't just there talking with them, I was actually working with them. From the well water to the natural wines they made themselves, none of this land would you consider beautiful rolling hills like you would find in the English countryside, which has some of the most beautiful land in the world. Instead, it was very hilly. And all day long, they're walking up and down and up and down and up and down these hills. And in fact, I was very impressed with the fact that none of their land was ever wasted space. So what you might consider too steep an incline, like a 70% incline, that was just, well, you just wouldn't plant anything on it. They had a whole vineyard on it. They would have an herb garden on it in boxes. They would be planting hanging vegetables that they would string from one end to the other. So nothing was wasted. And one of the old guys, he was about 85, he said, "Touch this," you know, and touched his leg, and it was just like steel from climbing up and down. Now, some of them smoked and some didn't. But it was the meal that really galvanized the issue for me. They had three generations seated at this long table. It was about 20 foot long. And at one end were the oldest, the matriarch and patriarch. And then their sons and daughters, who were in their 60s. Then their sons and daughters, who were in their 40s. Then theirs, who were in their 20s. So they had all these generations. And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching the nature of the conversations and the joy and the eye contact, and it was just wonderful to see the passion that was being shared, the joy, the love that was being shared between these people. And when I talked to them about what was their biggest concern, and I also found this in the French countryside, is the grandparents suggesting that when the kids who wanted a more modern style of living were moving away and becoming professionals, physicians and CPAs and professors, they rarely came home except on holidays. They were not healthy, and more often than not, they were not happy. A lot of conflict. But those that stayed in more rural environment tended to have greater relationships, longer relationships, and things were resolved if there was a conflict. And the man said that this would be the last generation, he feared, where people cared about living in the same home where a family had lived in the same lineage for 800 years. He said, today's kids, if we died, they'd sell the house, make as much money as they could, and never come back. Interesting, I saw a film a French film about this happening when a mother dies, had a nice home in the country, and all of her siblings were there on the opening of the film, celebrating a birthday, and talking about how wonderful it was. And yet when she died, they all want to get rid of it and make their money, without any thought of, would this still hold a place in their hearts or minds? And you see this happening all the time. In any case, I came back, and I needed additional confirmation, so I went down to Brazil and Venezuela, and Jamaica, wonderful people in Jamaica, by the way, and Barbados and Trinidad, everywhere I traveled, in Europe, in South America, wherever I went, I saw the same phenomena. The more quality relationships that people had, the healthier and happier people were. And that was the basis of writing my report. And in this report, I looked at the perfect diet, the perfect exercise, the perfect supplements, the perfect stress management. And when I added all that up, it was between 50 and 60% of what makes a good life, leaving 40 to 50% of what allows you to live a long and healthy life, quality of beliefs and values. So what you value and what you believe in, and the quality of your relationships, and that includes friendships. And then I saw with my own friends how many of my friends went through torturous relationships where when they were friends or single, they had a quality of life, a joy, a spontaneity, a freshness. And boy, in a bad relationship, not that all relationships by any means are bad, but in all my friends, every one of them ended up in divorce, without exception. My best friends. But between the badness happening and the relationship ending was a long period of time. In some cases, in one case, 15 years. And every conversation was about how bad things were. And then when I suggest, okay, well then, don't blame each other. Just accept that you're not right for each other. Appreciate, you know, the other person for the best they are and leave it be. But they couldn't do that. It's for all the wrong reasons. Well, we got to prove to our in-laws that we can make this work. Well, I got to prove it for the kids. No, you're not going to help a kid if you're in a bad relationship. You're certainly not going to help yourself. And then we had this whole movement. And some of these people were my friends. Carmi Harari, the people within the transactional movement, the Ericksonian movement, who believed that you could work out any problem. And I disagreed. In fact, Elaine Kahn, who is a close friend of mine, who is a leading psychologist in New York and one of the top psychologists and taught at Columbia, she was a big believer that you could, you know, all you had to do is find the right formula. And I said, what about the right formula being that you made a mistake and starting over? Why can't we accept that we can start over in a relationship with someone else or go through a period of being alone and learning the lessons of the mistake, so we're less likely to repeat the same lessons in another relationship? And it was only after I discovered the insights of the life energies that even if we're a good person with good energy, if we mismatch our energy with the wrong life energy, then it's not going to be a quality relationship. That does not mean it would be abusive, but it won't be quality. For example, dynamic with an adaptive supportive is never going to work. It is never going to work. And you're only going to create intimidation and fear and misunderstandings galore. And also, you got to watch if someone's on the higher end, higher or lower end of themselves. But if you get the right combination and you're both coming from a good place, then it can work. This wasn't even considered in psychology. Now many psychologists are actually using this model, and that's why I'm redoing Life Energy. I've had many requests from psychologists who use this and say it's helped them tremendously. Just getting people to honor their actual life energy on the higher end, that in itself can cause a lot of mental anguish to eliminate and confusion to end, and then a person get their life together. So I'm doing a new edition of that. In any case, it's always been my feeling that I've seen some of the most miserable people at these spiritual retreats and yoga retreats and health retreats. I've seen some of the worst aspects of human nature and self-actualization movements. And so we have to put all the formula together and the quality of relationship. Like tomorrow evening, I'll be having dinner with a group of friends. Could be four, could be as many as eight. We'll have dinner, which will be a lot of fun. Then we'll go to a Broadway play. And generally that will be bad. So then we'll leave at halftime and go to a movie, generally an art film. And then walk uptown, which is a lot of fun, talking. And end up at 11:30, 12 o'clock, having a late night snack up at the store. That's bonding. it reinforces the significance of that friendship. Now, these are longtime friends. And even friends who are not necessarily friends with each other, they're all my friends, so I bring them together and hope that they can find, you know, significance in another human being as well. And I believe that we don't have enough of this. Instead, we have friendships by friends on Facebook, which means nothing, or Twittering friends, or dating service friends, which is really not good. I mean, you got to understand what you're getting in these environments. A lot of desperation, a lot of false premises. You know, people rarely reveal who they really are and almost never tell you what you're going to get on the dark side or the downside of that ledger. These are the things you find through the normal interactions of people, and you make your decisions as you go. Is this worth pursuing or not? What am I getting? What am I surrendering? And then in balance, should I be here or not? And there's less confusion because life is simpler in a simpler environment, a more natural environment. In New York City, you go, there's a place down on the west side. It's a hotel. And any given night, starting about 11 o'clock or midnight, there must be 500 very well-dressed, youngish, 20, 30s, single people. And it's all about being there to network and get what you can. And it's a very cold, calculating environment. That's where the celebrities or the athletes go, because they know that because they're famous, they're going to be magnets for people. Without thinking, what's the likelihood someone's going to care for me as for who I am? Would they like me if I wasn't famous, or a basketball star, or a football star, or a hockey star, or a television producer? And the answer is no. So understand that you're playing Russian roulette. You know, you're like the guy who takes cocaine and says, wow, you know, I'm getting this rush of energy, yeah, and you just killed about a million brain cells to get it. It's not a healthy relationship. It's an artificial one induced by hidden agendas and ulterior motives. At least having good places to meet people instead of these kind of places, yet these are proliferating everywhere, especially amongst this new generation, that this is really how they put themselves out there. And it's all show and tell. Anyhow, it's just to let you know that quality relationships means quality of life. And we have too many lonely people. And there's something terribly wrong in a society that no longer sees you as having value because you're now 35 or 40 or 45 or 50. Or you're not as rich as, or you don't live in the right address, or you don't have the right background, or you're not right the ethnic or religious. And all of these are just superficial names that disguise the authentic person. I don't care what a person's ethnic or religious or economic status is, because I'm not going to share any of that with someone. I'm sharing what the heart is, what the mind is. Got a good mind, good sense of humor, laugh at yourself, laugh at life, don't take everything so seriously, don't personalize everything. Hey, then you pass the major criteria. But a lot of people, they don't care about that. All they care about is, do you match certain artificial criteria? And then they wonder why they don't have fulfilling relationships. They can't be themselves because they have not looked for authenticity. Too bad. Anyhow, this study reconfirms what I wrote in 1975. If you want to live a longer life, have quality friends and people in your life. Remember, quality friendships last. Rarely do romances, and almost never to the types of high passion relationships. Impossible? No. Rare? Yes. Even married people should first and foremost become friends, because then you've got something that is stronger than your differences. Next up, DHEA, which is a very important nutrient, that's a mother hormone from which all your other hormones are made, protects against obesity and breast tumors in animal study. Quote, from Oncological Reports, University of Arkansas Medical School says that DHEA can make an enormous difference in this study on protecting from carcinogen-induced mammary tumors. So, want to protect yourself against breast tumors? DHEA. How much? I'm going to suggest 25 milligrams a day. And finally, white button mushrooms. That's probably the most common type sold in the United States. Is a very beneficial health food and stimulates the immune system. That's according to the Agriculture Research Service funded research here and at the Jean Mayer USDA Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University, published in the Journal of Nutrition. So, on your brown rice or in your brown rice or your nice dishes, shiitake mushrooms and button mushrooms sauteed with olive oil, garlic, cayenne pepper, curry, delicious dish. Then blend that into some quinoa. That's a great dish. All that helps your immune system. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment, taking your calls for the rest of the show at 888-874-4888. I want to thank everyone, by the way, for going over to look at and support our brave vets who are now suffering. They're suffering from an enormous amount of post-traumatic stress disorder, Gulf War syndrome-related conditions, and homelessness and poverty and violence and suicide. And it's about 1.5 million that are adversely affected, 840,000 who are homeless in a given year, 500,000 who have Gulf War syndrome, and 75,000 who have died. I wrote 2 documented footnoted articles, and I now have 16 segments on YouTube showing 3 different films that are up there now, and they've gone viral. 60,000 blogs and major blog sites, including some of the biggest in the world, Global Research, Alex Jones's Prison Planet, and we're guesstimating right now that probably upwards of 35 to 40 million people have watched these. So we're really looking for positive help, and people are now making this an issue. So that's good news. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome everyone for making this the number one listened to progressive radio program in the world. And in fact, on Google, under Golf Vets, we come up first. In fact, on Google, we're now first in 12 different categories. So people are paying attention. Under liberal, we're number one. Progressive, number one. It means that people now have a forum. We're providing with insight, commentary, original articles, original investigation, documentaries, tools that help them better understand what they can do on these issues. Let's go over now. We have Bill Thompson standing by, who was down at the Philadelphia rally yesterday, and he'll give us his thoughts on this. Hi, Bill.
Hey, hey. How are you?
Good.
I want to start by saying, initially, around noontime, when this it's Unity, UNI-TEA event got started, milling around, conversation, it was like almost like a class reunion type of thing, although, as I found out, most of the people had never met before. But next thing that happened is the girl gets up to sing the national anthem a cappella, which is very nice, but I immediately looked around. Everybody shut up, turned around, stood at attention, and put their hand over their heart. I'm sorry, I know that sounds sloppy and soapy and so forth, but I want to tell you, it was very, very interesting to see that who these people are. These are, I guess it was about 10% of the people there were of African American or Hispanic descent. Half of the speakers there were that way, were it's a good diversity, and that was the whole purpose of this particular event, was to attack the problem on racism, and a lot of good things because of that came out. Unfortunately, the penultimate speaker was Andrew Breitbart, and I had told the organizer, Jeffrey Weingart, I said, you need to get these people out of your life. But I said to myself, let's listen to what he has to say. And it was nice points, a typical speaker giving a good point. But as you know, he is the man who put the video up on YouTube with Shirley Sherrod making anti-white statements, only to come to find out later, after the NAACP came after her, after the White House came after her, after her boss at the Department of Agriculture told her to literally pull off the road and call in your resignation, that Breitbart had edited it to make her look bad, when in fact what she was saying was really quite good. So I was hoping, I know, being foolish, I was hoping that Breitbart might issue some kind of an apology. No. Now, you're not going to believe this. I promise you, you're not going to believe this. His excuse was that by handling it in the way that he did, he's showing anti-racism on the other side of the fence. The most ridiculous thing. I mean, I wanted to throw up. I'm not kidding you. It was disgusting.
Okay, and I said forget Breitbart. He's no longer relevant, like a lot of people in the movement. He has discredited himself to such a degree that he will fade away and nobody will care about him very shortly. What did you learn from the people who were there? I interviewed over 300 people yesterday, so I'll tell you in a moment what I learned. I want to hear what you learned.
Okay. Give you an example. I interviewed a man and his wife. They were there with a little dog guy named Carl Robinson, and his wife Jennifer, a little dog named Lucy. And just a nice average guy. So I asked him what he does for a living. I've been out of work for 14 months. And I said, how are you surviving? He said, well, my wife works at a hospital taking care of senior citizens, so I'm trying to get by. And I said, well, what is your persuasion? He says, no, I'm not Republican. I'm not Democrat. I don't like the idea of being disrespected with the ideas that I have and the other people that I share these ideas with when the government says this is what's going to happen. Then I did, and this again, this is from white, this is from black, from Hispanic people that they are. Let me give you an idea. They use the line, government big enough to take care of you is also big enough to take everything you have away from you. I saw bonding. I saw camaraderie. It's an interaction of people that really like the idea of demanding proper representation. Then I was confronted by a young man from Toronto who had a bit of a supercilious attitude trying to corner the three people that were standing there about, well, what do you think of the health care? You want to get that tossed out, right? None of them said that. They all said, no, we just don't like the way that this particular bill was put through. Well, why is it America is the first thing with America is their idea of killing. They have to kill. And they looked at each other, and they went from 25 to 80% of the military budget should be cut. It's they're listening to your ideas, Gary. These are people that are saying, just because I'm on a more conservative, a slightly conservative side, does not mean I don't respect the liberal side of the picture when it comes to some of these answers. So the Canadian young man, the guy named Tom, he was very, very impressed with that. Then I talked to a guy who was with the Congress of Racial Equality. He happened to be the national spokesperson, a guy named Nigel Innes. And he, too, was upset with the ways that most of us, unless you're on the inside of the administration's good list, most of us are just not being paid proper attention to, and more specifically, jobs was the biggest problem, healthcare was the second, cap and trade was the third, the idea that the government's running a welfare state and trying to socialize everything, and there was never any issue with racism or anything of that nature. Everybody there was very, very up and positive. I liked what I heard, and I'm sorry that some of that one speaker was there. But
okay.
That's what I got.
Good. Bill, I want you to hold your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Anyone else who was there, I'm going to get you on immediately if you call in 888-874-4888. Let's see if someone else calls in who was there. I saw a few people that I recognized from my audience, but there were so many people I wouldn't have known many of the people who were there from the audience asking questions unless they identified themselves. While we're doing that, I'm going to take some other calls. Then we'll come back. My engineer will let me know if we have anyone calling who was there yesterday. Let's say hello to Pam from New Jersey. Hi, Pam.
Gary, I wanted to know, now that Obama gave all our tax money to the nuclear plant builders, how we can stop them from actually building them, if we could stop it by picketing the White House or nuclear plants. And
okay, let's look at that.
I have a few more comments, and then when I'm done, you can answer all of them.
All right, just make them quick, please.
And how can we stop Monsanto and the other ones from doing GMO? And also, I'd like a laptop, and if anyone has a laptop in northern New Jersey, you can reach me at pampaint@gmail.com. It's Pam, P-A-I-N-T, @gmail.com, preferably with a DV. D and CD copier.
And, okay. Well, let me deal with what you've said. First and foremost, as far as the nuclear, he didn't give all of our money. He gave $32 billion to supplement the wish list of the nuclear industry. That doesn't begin to build even one nuclear facility that would go closer to in the neighborhood of $50 billion or higher. What it does, it's another form of what I'm concerned about, and that is helping those who have given the most money and have had the most lobbyists and who've had the people appointed from their industries in positions of policymaking within the administration. So if you look in the Nuclear Energy Department, you're going to see a whole rash of people from oil, coal, gas, and nuclear. You won't find anyone from solar or wind or geothermal. And this is something that Obama has done in every single one of his efforts. No matter what the governmental agency, it's always someone picked from let's say the pro-industry side, not the pro-consumer, and certainly not pro-progressive. Now, what we can do is we can become aware of the dangers of nuclear, just not nuclear bombs, but rather nuclear power stations. I did a documentary. It was called Fatal Fallout. Martin Sheen narrates it. And in it, you will see all the lies that they tell us. For example, Helen Caldicott's in there, by the way, who now has a new show right here on the Progressive Radio Network in the afternoon on Sundays. We didn't mention it this week. We didn't know she was going to start, but she started today. And now we'll be putting up ads for her because she's a great, great person, a humanitarian, an activist, a physician, and one of the most knowledgeable people in the world on nuclear. And Michio Kaku. And I filmed him up at his lab at Sydney University of New York Graduate Center. And we went out into the field, Dr. Rosalie Bartel, in fact, everyone, Dr. Ernest Sternglass and Jay Gould before he died. Everyone who has something important to show about why nuclear is not efficient, not cost-efficient, is unsafe, and is a major polluter. So, in other words, undercutting all of their lies and propaganda. It's not green. It's deadly. We have to get that information out. Now, I wrote a series of articles. In fact, these are seminal articles with Dr. Sternglass and Jay Gould on the actual number of people who died after Three Mile Island, especially children who were downwind. and the spike in that, and how then someone in some agency came in later and erased all the figures. What they didn't count upon is that we would get the original figures, so when they came back and redid those figures, they didn't anticipate someone had the original figures. We did, and therefore we can prove unequivocally that someone with malice aforethought and illegally erased government figures of actual deaths, in especially of newborn children and those who were sick, and substituted new figures that didn't show those increases where ours did, over 50,000. In any case, it's just information. We need to educate the public, just as we're doing about the homeless golf vets, and just as we did this past year with vaccines, which is one of the reasons 80 to 90% of the physicians and nurses throughout Europe refused to take the vaccines, because it went viral, and we estimate upwards of 100 million people worldwide looking at over 160,000 blog sites that carry the articles saw the truth rather than just the propaganda of their local health departments or their the World Health Organization. So we have to have that campaign. So that's a campaign. We have the tools. And I have new filmed interviews to make it relevant today. So we will be making that a campaign in the middle of the fall. Right now it's back to vaccines because they announced today, vaccines are back, and this year is going to be at least three different types of viruses, some dead, some alive, in the new vaccines. And we're opposed to that. They're suggesting every American over the age of 6 months get the vaccines. We're going to show that the vaccines are toxic, not safe, not effective. But again, that's a campaign. One show on the radio, one television program, an article will not do it. You have to have a whole lot of people sharing that information, having it go viral, and the information has to be quality information, scholarly information, and verifiable, so they can't find holes in it. That's what we will do to counter that, and then we will get political candidates to look at this information and make it a part of their platform. And then you have strength in numbers. So that's what I'm suggesting on that level. Okay? All the best to you, and thank you for calling in. Let's say hello to David calling from California. Hi, David.
Hi, Gary.
Hi.
I got two questions, Gary. One is on alkalized water. Besides alkalizing the water, is it doing anything else as far as cleaning, purifying, removing any toxins?
No, it is not.
Number two is on...
No, it is not. And a lot of machines out there and a lot of MLM companies are selling you an awful expensive machine that they're making an enormous profit on. I've seen one machine that's out there for about $5,000. I'm going to guesstimate that it costs them around $400. And they've got all these MLMs alkalizing this, but it doesn't filter out all the things you need. You need a machine that filters out 100% of all pesticides, lead, mercury, cadmium, parasites, industrial effluents, and medicines in the water. And then you have something of value to drink. Okay.
So that's reverse osmosis or distilled?
Distilled, not reverse osmosis.
Okay.
All right.
My second was on the state of Utah. You mentioned Utah earlier. As a state, how do you feel about it in its sustainability, long-term sustainability, food, water, and so on, for just single couples and that, singles and couples?
Well, it depends upon whether you're at the bottom of the state or the northern end of the state.
Probably more mid to bottom, southern, mid to southern.
Then it depends upon several factors. Utah now has one of the high heat indexes in the United States. It has a very arid environment, though very beautiful. It's got Monument Valley out there, which in my opinion is one of the most beautiful places in America, plus Blue Lake, which is Bear Lake, which is one of the most beautiful lakes in America. You see it from a long drive coming, because it's just so blue, and that's not from the water, that's from the minerals underneath, the rock. But what you have to do is the same thing people have to do in New Mexico, Idaho, Colorado, Montana, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Oklahoma and Texas. First and foremost, make sure that you do a geological survey to see that you have an underground spring. not just a normal aquifer, because some of these aquifers are based upon damming up lakes or rivers and then supplying the people within a given area. But the way the laws work now, there are treaties between states. So Los Angeles and San Diego don't have their own water supply. They have to get it through a 400-mile canal from Northern California, but also from the Colorado. And if you look at Lake Mead, it's way down. And if you look at the lower precipitate, because there's less snowpack in the mountains, it's melting too fast, the runoff doesn't fill aquifers or lakes. Instead, it just creates massive flooding and destruction. So we have too much melt-off, not sustained, and therefore, only if there's underground springs would I buy property. If there's no underground spring, I would not buy the property, because sooner or later, you're going to find that there's all kinds of restrictions and rationing on the existing water supplies. Then check your soil. You got to be able to grow, and for that you need quality 6 inches of topsoil. So get a mineral analysis done of the topsoil. And then you have to look at your heat indexes, because you're not going to be able to grow anything. It's going to bake it out. And then you have to look at your primary insects, because if it gets too hot, the only thing that's going to survive are insects, and whatever you grow, they're going to eat. And then quality to markets. Whatever you make or however far you are can be beautiful, but you've got to be able to socialize and you've got to be able to have an interaction with other people. So those things must be taken into consideration before you make your choice. All right? All the best to you.
Thank
David,
you.
Got to go. Let's say hello to Bob from West Nyack, New York. Bob?
Good evening, Gary. I've got a garden going in my backyard.
Yeah?
And I'm trying to grow it as naturally as I can. And my zucchinis are getting eaten up by some sort of bug, and I'd like to use something, but obviously I don't want to use any chemicals. What do you suggest?
For zucchinis, it's generally a worm that gets in there, and that's what causes those brown patches and a fungus. So first and foremost, don't let your zucchinis or peppers or eggplant on the ground, nor tomatoes. Put them all up on wires, and you can make a 5-foot-high pole. Put it in the ground 3 feet, then about every 10 feet, put another pole in the ground, then string wire in between them so it's taut, and then vine that so that the vines carry the over the wire, so the fruits are up off the ground, and that will save at least 50% of the problems you're going to have. Then when you do have those problems, get a garlic dilution, generally in a spray. You would put about 6 ounces of garlic, about a teaspoon of cayenne pepper, some apple cider vinegar, and the rest would be Tabasco sauce. And then you spray the affected area and also spray the ground around it. And then use fish emulsion on the ground to reestablish a healthy medium growing in the ground. Okay? All the best to you.
Thank you very much.
Let's say I'm still not getting a call in on the teabagger, so we'll go back and finish that part off in a moment. But let's continue on from Tampa, Florida. Let's say hello to Frank. Hi, Frank.
Yes, hello, Gary. Thank you for taking my call. My question involves the differences between men and women coping with heat and humidity. I like to mainly have air conditioning. I could just about live with that 24/7. My wife, on the other hand, finds any air conditioning to be really uncomfortable, and she's quite happy with even here in Tampa, Florida, the windows closed and the, no air or cross current, even in fan. If she steps in front of a fan, she says that the air is too cold and it bothers her. I'm just wondering, is there some sort of a program I need to be on? Is there something that maybe needs to be adjusted for her or perhaps for both of us? Because she could be quite happy if the indoor temperature is in the 90s, and like I said, no airflow, but that's just not something that I can easily cope with.
Mm-hmm. Divorce. Say goodbye. I'm going to hang out with the bud and cool, and you go over there and roast. Well, two things you can do that can help her and you. Get solar panels for your roof. They're not expensive, anywhere from $400 to $700. And depending upon the size of your roof, one will cover about 1,500 square feet. And that puts an exhaust fan in your attic with an automatic thermostat. So when the heat gets up in your attic above 100 degrees, it will take that fan and exit out that hot air. That is the primary cause of hotter air in your living space. And that will reduce the heat in the living space substantially. All right, so that makes the room much more comfortable for everyone. And then you should simply have her have a space and say, look, take a room that you're going to do whatever you enjoy doing in, and you have a room that you enjoy being in, because if you're not comfortable physically, then you're not going to be comfortable emotionally. And people shouldn't compromise on this. So if you have enough room in your house where you can each have some space in the temperate zone that you like, and then try to set the thermostat in the common use areas where it's not as hot as she would like nor as cool as you would like. So there's where you make a compromise. Let's say if you like it at 70 and she likes it at 90, make it at 78. Okay? All the best to you, Frank.
And thank you.
We'll take one more call right now from Dan from Coral Springs. Dan, I've got a lot of calls to take, so please make it short.
Yeah, I'll make it short. I'm off the Xanax. I'm on L-theanine and valerian root. And I just want to let you know, you sound great, and your voice sounds like younger than ever. I think you're going to probably live to 150 years old, which you said that every human could possibly do. That's 150 years old. Anyway, I'm on since the thing of getting off the Xanax, I'm on the metoprolol now because my dialastic, my systolic is fine, it's 116, but the dialastic went up to like, you know, since I got off the Xanax, it went up to like 90. So they put me on metoprolol, M-E-T-O-P-R-O-L-O-L, 100 milligrams two times a day. First of all, number one, is there anything I could take besides L-theanine, valerian root for the depression and anxiety? Number two, is there anything I could take to get rid of the metoprolol, 100 milligrams two times a day?
All right, I'll answer the one question. I can't answer the other question.
All right, Gary. All right.
St. John's Wort, 300 milligrams.
Okay.
And theanine, 200 milligrams four times a day. And that will give you a really nice, peaceful, and calm feeling. And also, you would have to speak with your physician, because what you're asking me is a medical issue which I cannot answer. All right? That's something only your physician could tell you. Now, we're going to go back to Bill Thompson here in a moment. I thought someone else would call in, hopefully. They will in the next few minutes at 888-874-4888. If you have any thoughts about the Tea Party, even if you weren't there yesterday and you would like to share your thoughts, please call in. I'd like to hear on it. Also, I will take as many calls for the rest of the show as possible. I don't see any calls coming at this moment for the Tea Party. So, Bill, I will share my thoughts and then we'll close that segment with you before I go back to other calls. The whole reason that I went down there, the whole reason I've been going to these Tea Party movements and speaking with people, is because of the enormous amount of animus and vitriol that the left and the liberals have been heaping from Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann and others in the media, to paint these individuals as being universally racist, universally right-wing and conservative, universally wealthy and older. And if indeed that is the case, then they are of concern. And especially those who've been able to get into the media have been really, I consider, intellectually, spiritually, grossly imbalanced, and not people that we should take seriously. And a couple of those people are self-destructing. However, my own research, and as for example, I interviewed at least 75% of the people who were there yesterday, because some people would, when I start asking questions, there'd be 4, 5, 10 other people gather around. Here's what I found. At least 90% of the people there yesterday consider themselves independent, not Democrat, not Republican, because I asked them. Most also support a more of a libertarian point of view, a Ron Paul libertarian point of view, meaning that they want less regulations and less government interference in their life. And yet 100% of the people I spoke to supported the small business people in the United States as being the answer to get out of our problems. About half supported staying in Iraq and Afghanistan to, quote, do the job. And it was not for me to argue any issue. I was not there to debate these issues. And half said that we shouldn't be there. These were just the neocons and we should get out. The vast majority of people tended to be more fiscally conservative, but not ideologically conservative. Only about 2% of the people I interviewed said that they would vote for Sarah Palin. Most of them were angry at Sarah Palin and the Republicans for trying to co-opt the movement. There are currently now at least 1,000 Tea Party leaders of small groups. It's a purely grassroots movement, but the public doesn't know that. There's about 20 to 22 million people currently identified as Tea Party. And when I asked them, I had a list of 20 things. Would you support or reject the following? Having a flat federal income tax of 12% to 15% and a flat corporate tax where everyone who owns a corporation, small or large, must pay the same identical tax, 10%. They all agreed. I said, and every person in America should pay some income tax. No matter how poor, they must pay something. This idea that 57% of Americans pay no income tax is simply not sustainable, and it's not realistic, and it's not fair. They agreed with that. They also agreed that that we should reduce, and I said the military-industrial complex is one of the two largest expenditures of money that the average person gets nothing for. Would you support a reduction of 20 to 80%, and the vast majority said 80%. I also told them that the medical-industrial complex is the largest single expenditure in our lives, and it's $2.6 trillion, and at least $1 trillion of that is pure waste. $700 billion is unnecessary medical tests and unnecessary medical treatment, and those are studies that I quoted in my article, Death by Medicine, and they were not aware of all this, that these were problems. The average person is unaware that our medical system isn't working and hasn't worked and is really broken and is being exploited. They would support that as well. I found that that when I said, "Why have you tolerated racism and radicalism and anarchism within this movement?" They said because they had no power to tell people not to come to the meetings. 90% of the people I interviewed yesterday were middle class. Many were unemployed, and I did not see these very wealthy, white, retired individuals who seem to be using this as a way of just complaining about excess taxation. These people were interested in jobs. These people had very little take-home pay. These people felt that the banking system got a free check, and they didn't. They are not getting helped. A lot of the people I interviewed yesterday are having homes foreclosed on or in credit card debt, and no one's there to support them. And they were all, to a person, disappointed that the Democrats, many of them were former Democrats. In fact, I found that about 40% of all the people I interviewed yesterday had formerly been Democrats. And one was a school teacher, and she said that she'd been a former Democrat and supported Clinton and supported Obama and supported her legislators and senators who were liberal. But she said that they had betrayed, and she saw it after they got voted into Congress and did not get us out of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, as they promised. And she said that the Democrats have betrayed the unions, and she's a union member, and they betrayed. And she said the Republicans don't even hadn't even pretended to betray the unions. They were against unions. And so she said she couldn't trust either Republicans or Democrats. And I got that across the board. So I just believe that two things are going to happen. I believe that the Democrats are going to wake up one day and find that an awful lot of average middle-class people who have been on the short end of receiving anything from this government except contempt are going to rebel by voting them out of office. And their hope is that there's a new movement, a breaking up of the Tea Party movement, which I feel is inevitable, and so that the people will really be able to identify whether they're more conservative or more progressive or liberal or whatever they might be, so people can actually see it's just not one movement. There's an enormous amount of differences in opinions out there, and yet the media has tried to make it seem very simplistic so they can label them and then try to disempower them, and that is disingenuous, and they do so at their own risk. Now, I do have someone in here who was in Philly yesterday, Jose from Brooklyn. Hi, Jose.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good. Your experience yesterday. We don't have a lot of time, so tell me exactly what your experience was.
Denise and I, we went up there with Jonathan, and we met Bill Thompson.
Yes.
And we did interview a couple of people. We wanted Jonathan to do our home project and see what people thought about what's going on in this country. And we interviewed a lady who was 75 years old. Oh, that was one of the ladies we interviewed. And
yes.
She was... She basically wanted people to get more involved and that this country is going down the drain. She's very upset that people are serving positions for 10 to 20 years and ignore the voices of their constituents.
I would agree with that.
Yes. She's against abortion. She's saying that 60% of black fetuses are aborted, and she considers it genocide. We asked her about should we be in Iraq. She said she had mixed feelings concerning that, and that Iraq is a dictatorial regime. And her Christian values are that America stands for the land of new beginnings. Overall, we interviewed quite a few, 9 people actually, in this interview while I was handing out one of the vaccination. But there was a lot of mixed feelings there, but I tend to agree with a lot of the speakers over there. This country is run by corporate America. We no longer have a say in what actually happens.
I would agree with that.
But we actually missed. We got there a little late. We got stuck in traffic. But we did manage to speak to Bill Thompson and help him out with the vaccination. Okay. And we did conduct 9 interviews.
Jose, thank you. We're out of time. Bill Thompson, you got 30 seconds. Wrap it up.
A lady there approached me, and she's pointed to you. She says, "Is that Gary Null?" And I said, "Yes." "Oh, my God." So there were people, and that wasn't the only one. She wouldn't go over and talk to you. Important thing that I got out of the whole thing is that people are very, very angry, and unless there is a release for this, I don't think it's going to have a happy ending.
Well, I know it's not going to have a happy ending, and the people in Washington and the state levels in New York and every other state and the local city levels, as long as they are in a position of being protecting themselves and their families, they are really disconnected from what the average person goes through day to day. And if we cannot reconnect with the passion, the commitment, and the compassion for people who are suffering and change how they're suffering, then these people sooner or later are going to disconnect from the power base, go off the grid, and start protesting. And yep. I'm going to deal with that on tomorrow's program about what's happening now in America that I predicted would happen. Even in the safest of environments, there's now muggings and killings. People are disillusioned, and yet the people are just out of touch in Washington. They're out of touch. They've been out of touch. They're corrupt. And I believe everyone is fully aware of that. Thank you very much, Bill Thompson.
Thank you.
And we have under a minute to go. Real quick from Kansas City. Gary, what's on your mind? Gary, you're on the air. from Kansas City. I got to go, Gary. Sorry you weren't there. Okay. We're out of time. Stay tuned for Richard Martin here on the Progressive Radio Network. I look forward to sharing more with you tomorrow. I have a lot of interesting commentaries I'm going to share with you tomorrow at noon and again at 3. Have a nice evening, everyone.